First of all, I think we probably addressed fewer of the major issues this year, in part because of that race. Because, in my opinion, the governor didn't want to address some of those real touchy issues like Medicaid expansion, for example, or aggressively trying to address the concerns with some of the Common Core, the health exchange stuff. And so it was a short session. And admittedly, it was a bit awkward because I'm the caucus chairman for the Senate, which is one of the primary liaisons with the governor's office. And we knew that going in, but it worked out okay. But it was different.
You've made Obamacare the cornerstone of your campaign. Governor Otter successfully pushed for the state-run health insurance exchange now two legislative sessions ago. Had you been governor back in 2012, what would you have done differently?
Well, first of all, there is no such thing as a state exchange. I just have to continue to reiterate that because that's a misnomer that a lot of people fall into the trap. There's only a federal exchange. It's just who operates it. Is it a federal exchange operated by federal employees or a federal exchange operated by state employees? But I would not have voluntarily embraced it. I would have advised the federal government that if they choose to go do that, then I guess they'll have to go do that. But in the meantime, we would have embarked on a private alternative where we would have put in place components of a healthcare system that would have made more sense. A good model to look at, or at least some good ideas that reference what I'm talking about, is what Bobby Jindal in Louisiana is talking about and what the steps they are taking, some of the things that have happened in Texas. Bottom line is that if the feds are going to go do an exchange, then let them go do it. In the meantime, I think it's up to the states to come up with a system that truly does work.
So in Idaho, then, under your watch, there would have been the federal health insurance exchange, as you described, but also a private version in addition to that one.
That's correct. And we would, and frankly, Scott, that's something that should have been done some time back, but it's just difficult to do. But now that we're in the circumstances we're in, there's a level of urgency, I think, that wasn't necessarily there before. And after we succeed in winning the governorship, we will embark on that path immediately.
Enrollment in Idaho is 190% during the first 6 months of Obamacare here. A lot of people are going to look at that and say, hey, Obamacare here is working. Idaho is embracing this federal program. Has the success, or that interpreted success, kind of cut maybe your legs out of that messaging a little bit during your campaign?
I find it incredibly ironic that on a national scale, it's generally failing. And Idaho, of all states, is scrambling to prop it up. And we're scrambling to prop it up because we invested in it. We're scrambling to prop it up because we voluntarily brought it in. And that's something on the governor's back. He's going to have to carry that. And this is a federal program that, yes, there is being some adoption to this, and that's the problem with it. Here's the bottom line. We create a superior alternative. We create a parallel free market path that has things like a healthcare savings account. It's got a healthcare membership component, opening up to competition, direct pay, charity care, those types of components. That will be a superior solution. And so when Obamacare does fail on a national level, we'll have the correct system in place. And we'll also be drawing people away from that as we succeed in putting forth a better system within our state.
Have the numbers surprised you, though?
Well, I don't know whether I can believe them. Here's the issue that no one can seem to break out right now is how many of those enrollees are using that as a portal to enroll into Medicaid. We don't know that. And how many would have otherwise? How much of this is Medicaid woodworking effect where the health portal is being leveraged for that purpose? So to be honest, I don't really have an opinion there. I mean, it is what it is. It doesn't change the need to create an alternative.
Let's talk about Medicaid a little bit. Governor Otter has not yet pushed to expand Medicaid. He's been very deliberate in studying what some other states are doing.
No, he's going to. Well, here's a newsflash.
You feel like he is. What would you do as governor?
If he's reelected, he will, and I think. And, well, I would not expand it. And here's why. It's a broken system. And it's just not wise to expand a broken system. Number two is it is another significant expansion of government. And so it takes, it's another major phase of the Affordable Care Act vision, which is to take the healthcare decisions away from the individual, away from the family, and put it in the hands of the government. Number three is there's a better alternative. And that alternative is to proliferate some private clinics that are more efficient cost-wise and that better serve the most vulnerable among us. And this is just part of the solution, but it's a good idea to take some of these clinics and proliferate them in strategic locations so the most vulnerable among us will go to those clinics for their care instead of the hospital emergency room. Hospital emergency room is the most expensive form of delivery we have. That's a major component of the Medicaid cost. And we can save money and we can improve care by using a clinic system as opposed to our hospital emergency rooms.
Well, some people are going to hear that message of privatization and say, wait a minute, we just tried that with the prison and now that hasn't worked and we're taking it back over as a state.
Yeah, here's the difference. With the prisons, there was a natural incentive put in place to try to keep them full. At least that's an argument, and I think there's some merit in there. We've pretty much taken the free market out of the medical system, and that is the problem with that. And so if we put the control of the money in the hands of people and we insert some free market components and some competition, which is a rightful place for medical care, and I wouldn't say that necessarily is a rightful place for corrections, then we're going to drive costs down and we're going to improve access and we're going to improve the performance of the system to the people who need it the most.
There's that group of people who make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but they don't make enough. Let me say that again. There's a group of people that fall in between Medicaid and being able to get subsidies through the state-run health insurance exchange. Under your plan, how do you address that group of people?
Well, there's two ways. One is we need to put in place some high deductible type of plans, and we can structure that through state law, and those high deductible plans are much more affordable for people who need some kind of coverage. There's another channel that we can pursue as well, and it's a healthcare membership type of a model. Imagine for a moment that you had a similar type membership for healthcare that you would for the local gym, and you pay a certain flat rate per month based on your coverage, and a physician or a group of physicians offer in return for that payment a upfront identified range of services. It's a win for the physicians because they know they have a revenue stream. It's a win for individuals because they have a lower cost system by which they can know that they've got certain areas of healthcare covered.
Switch gears. Let's talk about Common Core, the education standards that a lot of states have passed, more than 40 in the past few years. Idaho passed them in 2011. You've been very critical. You say they do not have a place in the state of Idaho. A lot of people were waiting for you during the legislative session to bring forth some legislation to take those off the books. You didn't do that. How come?
Well, first of all, there's nothing to repeal. A lot of people think that Common Core is statute, it's state law, but it's not. It's a series of rules that were put in place through the Department of Education. So it's not as simple as just saying we're going to repeal Common Core. What you have to do is you have to put in place a series of replacements. And to be honest, you know, the Department of Ed really should be the focal point of doing that, I think, not the legislature. And we did, by the way, come up with a number of alternatives and are proliferating those as alternatives to the Common Core path. But it does need focus, and it will take some leadership in a different direction. But I need to back up for just a moment, if we can, and explain that when this was originally offered through the Department of Ed, I think it was 2011. It wasn't, as I recall, it wasn't called Common Core, and it was sold, if you will, by the Department of Ed to the legislature in the form of a rule. And my memory was it was something that was promoted as a way to lock local control into the education system in Idaho. And you may recall at that time, Jeb Bush, former governor from Florida, he was big on this, and he was traveling around the country and promoting it. And we bought off on that. When I say we, the legislature bought off on that. But as time has come on, it simply did not come out. It did not be, it's not being delivered as advertised. It's something different than what we thought. So it is a standardization that I think is not healthy, and it forces Idaho institutions, Idaho schools, to act in a certain way that may or may not be in the best interest of the local demographic.
Can you, as governor, do you have the power to, force a new education superintendent to take it off the books? You're very critical of it, but how would you go about changing it?
Yeah, so what you do is you promote your alternatives. First of all, you draw in the major stakeholders from the education system, public education system. You draw those together and you lay out a system that works, and you take a best of class. If you followed what Indiana has done, my understanding of that model is good.
Which Indiana has backed away now.
They have backed away. And my understanding is that they have said, look, we want to be better. We don't want to just take a minimum standard here that's some national standard, because Indiana is different than Detroit. Indiana is different than Idaho. We want to be able to customize that. We want a best of class. And there might be a component of Common Core that they'd keep. There might be a component of an Idaho standard that they want, or Utah or Massachusetts. But they want that freedom, they want that flexibility to go out and pick those best of class standards and apply that to the unique and specific demographics within Indiana. Idaho should do the same thing. Even within Idaho, the demographic is significantly different in Boise than in Caldwell, or Caldwell to Rexburg, or Rexburg to Riggins. And we've got to give our teachers and our parents the empowerment to be able to customize their methodology to drive those standards as high as possible with that demographic.
A lot has been made the last couple of years about Idaho's rankings near the bottom of U.S. wages. It's getting a lot of attention here, much like education spending has gotten a lot of attention in the last few years in the state of Idaho. What would you do as governor to create more higher-paying jobs than what Governor Otter has been able to?
There's two primary issues here. The first one is the health care law. The health care law is scaring our small employers to death. And I've seen that over and over and over again. And I can give you numerous examples where companies have either opted not to expand, or in some cases even shut down or shrink, because they do not want to have to comply with the penalty for having 49 employees or more. And that's just one example. So we've got to create that healthcare alternative, because there's a social cost that is stifling our economic growth. The second thing, in longer term, but much more, I think, long-term impactful, is this. Idaho has been constricted from its natural wealth, from its natural resources. 62% of the resources of the land that we stand on are controlled by the federal government, and we've got incredible wealth there. We have natural gas, timber, mining resources, and we have been limited to 38% of that access. Well, and even more now, because we have minimum wage jobs because we have been relegated to a service type of industry, a service-based economy here. And if we get access to some of the natural resource-based jobs we have in this state, that's where the true manufacturing base economy comes from. And that's that economy that rotates through the system over and over and over again. Timber jobs, mineral jobs, energy jobs. So our resources are the key to our economy over time. If we get access to our resources, we control our destiny, we prosper. If we do not get access to our resources, we will be continued to be relegated to a service-based economy and have a high minimum wage job component here.
You have been painted from the get-go as, you know, the Tea Party candidate. I talked with one sort of senior Republican official here in Idaho last fall, and he sort of chuckled at the notion that somebody was trying to position themselves to the right on the political spectrum of Governor Otter. He picked up a recent endorsement from a group in northern Idaho, some business people who say they support reasonable Republicans. Are you not let me ask that a different way. Do you think your message will ultimately resonate with enough voters in this primary to beat the incumbent?
When I hear that, I always get amused, because If you take a look at my positions, every single one is in line with the Republican Party platform in its entirety. And the major positions the governor has taken is outside the party platform. Healthcare is an example. Schools Common Core is an example. Closed primary is an example. And so when I hear that I'm the one who is outside the fringe of the party or whatever, I always smile to myself, and because normally those who accuse me of that haven't seen the party and lined up who's really where.
But that group would say that that party platform was established by a core people who are on the far right of the Idaho GOP.
Well, it's been there for a long time. And so what I usually hear is from people who have left the party that they say, hey, I used to be a Republican, but the Republican Party left me. But that platform is still there, and that really hasn't changed too much. And so I adhere to the party platform. And to that end, I consider myself the mainstream candidate on that front. But there's no question, Scott, there is a divide in our party, and it's splintered significantly. And the general argument is, should we be a bigger tent and really not take that much stock in adhering to what our platform philosophy is? Or should we shrink that tent down and have kind of some truth in advertising? And if someone wants to be part of that party, there should be some kind of affiliation to the philosophical basis for it. Personally, I think that it's good for the major two-party system in our state to have some truth in advertising. There's nothing wrong with being a Republican. There's nothing wrong with being a Democrat. If you subscribe to that philosophical viewpoint, then subscribe to it. I work well with the people across the aisle philosophically. All I require is somebody who cares. And if somebody who is motivated and they care about an issue, we're going to come to a solution. This whole notion of being fringe or whatever, it's without basis as far as I'm concerned.
Two very quick answers here. If you win on May 20th, what will you have done right?
I adhered to the main vision points that we set out to address. If it weren't for health care or education or lands, I wouldn't be in this race.
If you don't win, where will you have failed?
If I don't win, I will have failed not to appropriately get the message out. And that's what
you think it's the right message.
It's the right message. And I know it is, because of the thousands of people I have personally interacted with, regardless of their political persuasion, then I get an ally 99% of the time. So as a challenger going against a 40-plus year incumbent, is there a machine that we have to fight? Is there a communication, monetary generating machine? Absolutely. And so if we fail, it would be because we did not overcome that machine. But frankly, right now we're overcoming the machine. I expect to win because our message is right. It resonates with the people.
State Senator, Republican, Russ Fulcher, candidate for governor. Thank you for coming in.
Scott, thank you for the opportunity.